This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
The default parent is really about who owns the tasks and the roles in the home. It's really the unspoken rules about when the kids say that they need something or something needs to be done or someone needs to go and get something. So who is the default responsible for the children? It's the assumed person that has ownership over the tasks and roles.
Welcome back to the Peds Doc Talk podcast. This show is a top 50 parenting podcast in the United States because of you. And I say this and I mean it. Your reviews and ratings is what helps this show grow. And it's so important to the podcast world. So continue leaving them or updating them. Today's guest is Erica Jossa, who is the CEO and founder of Momwell and a registered psychotherapist specializing in maternal mental health with over a decade of experience. As a mother of three rambunctious young boys, Erica understands firsthand the challenges of motherhood. Perfectionism, pressure, and loss of identity fueled her battle with postpartum depression, and she realized how difficult it is to seek care. She is also the author of the new book, Releasing the Motherload, How to Carry Less and Enjoy Motherhood More, which is out today. And we're talking about the default parent dilemma, strategies for shifting dynamics. Thank you so much for joining me today, Erica.
Thank you so much for having me here. I'm just excited to spend time with you and your community.
Well, congratulations. I've been following you on social media through the pandemic, actually, and obviously the work that you do, really helping mothers realize, you know, about the perfectionism pressure and all the things that we all deal with, but we sometimes don't realize it is or talk about it. I just think it's so valuable what you bring to the table. And congratulations on your new book. Tell us more about yourself and also what encouraged you to write this book, Releasing the Motherload.
Yeah, thank you so much. I'm not sure if you feel the same way, but I certainly didn't set out through school to have a platform and create content and write a book. That's not sort of what I saw in the scheme of things and the plan initially. But I found myself in private practice, kind of chugging along after my master's degree, debating whether to get my doctorate, trying to figure out what to do in my first couple years of marriage. And then I entered into motherhood kind of full force. I had three boys in the span of 3.5 years, and it was like a shove into the deep end of motherhood. And I went through my own postpartum depression and anxiety after that experience, which really blindsided me, I feel like, for a couple of reasons. One, I'm a clinician. I literally teach these skills to people for a living day in and day out, right? Like, so there's a part of it that's like, I know the skills. Why am I struggling here? And then the other part of it was that I didn't even know maternal mental health was a specialty. I'd never heard about it in school, in my clinical experience. And so I didn't know that it was such a high risk time for me and for other mothers going through this adjustment and this transition. So I really niched down in the field and took to social media. It was actually just before the pandemic, to help mothers adjust and transition into their new role, to share some of the things that I had niched down in and was learning, because if I didn't know with the experience and education I had, I assumed others didn't either. And the platform really took off during that time. One of the things we became really known for was my Invisible Load series, taking invisible labor and the mental tasks and load that we carry and putting it into like a visible structure that helped us to articulate and share with our partner the things that we were carrying day in and day out. And it's one of the things that the platform just became known for over the years. And in talking with my agent and figuring out what direction to head with the book, she's like, if you could leave one thing out in the world, you know, what would it be? And I just know and feel so strongly that people can choose their own path in motherhood. It's really a choose your own adventure versus it having to look any one particular right way. But we have to unlearn some things and go on a bit of a journey first in order to get there and feel comfortable and confident in choosing our own journey. So ultimately, Releasing the Motherload is taking you through examining some of these beliefs that get just jammed into this junk drawer that we have, that we pull on when we become moms and we try to embody, but they may be outdated. They may not resonate with our values. They might be put there by others and sort of assigned to us, and we don't necessarily agree to them. So we go through it, unpack it, and really anchor in what's important to you in motherhood so you can let go of all of the pressure and all of the rest.
Oh, I love it. I love origin stories, you know, talking about where you came from and what brought you to this point and writing this book. And yeah, I agree with you. You know, when I became a pediatrician, social media, writing, especially all the video creation and podcasting that I do, was never a reality for me because I didn't know anyone else doing that. Yeah. And now it's so great, like you, to be able to reach so many people with the passions that we have. And, you know, although I am a pediatrician, I love having people like you on the show to talk about this, because this is what makes us, quote unquote, more available and present parents, you know, understanding the struggles that we're going through, understanding why am I carrying so much load? Is this something that I'm putting on myself, not utilizing resources, anything, you know, what is it that I need more of, really just helps us show up better as mothers. So I love that. And, you know, I know we're talking about the default parent, which I know you've spoken to many times on your platform as well. What is the default parent, and how does someone know that they're the default parent?
Yeah, it's a really great question, because I hear a lot, well, you know, partners are taking on so much more than they ever have before. They take on, like, I don't know, 33% of the household labor, for example. And while that is true, and it is great that there is more conversations happening about this, the default parent is really about who owns the tasks and the roles in the home. It's really the unspoken rules about when the kids say that they need something, or something needs to be done, or someone needs to go and get something. So who's the default responsible for the children? It's the assumed person that has ownership over the tasks and roles. And often what I find when I speak with people is that this was never really a conscious conversation. It was just sort of assumed, because I'm mom, I will be primary drop off and pick up. I will be primary point of contact for the pediatrician or for the dentist or the various others. So it's really about ownership and examining how we got to holding these tasks. And did we put our names on them willingly and within a conscious conversation? Or did they just kind of get handed to us and we accepted them because we think this is what it means to be a good mom?
Ooh, I love it. And you brought up so many great examples of that default parent that they seem small, but when they add up, can really feel, you know, add to that mental load that we also talk about, being in charge of all those things, the daily things that add up. And why do you feel like, speaking of heterosexual relationships, okay, so a male and a female, why do you think that women have tended to become the default parent, even if those conversations were had or weren't had with a partner?
It's so often due to gender roles and role dynamics as parents. And research shows us that actually same-sex partners have a more equal distribution within the home because they don't have gender to default to. So there will be more conversations about who's going to take on what.
Yeah.
Whereas with a male and a female partner, we fall into these roles that we have seen modeled in our own, you know, childhood, in media, like all over the place. And we've really internalized some core messages about what it means to be a good mom. And it's really tricky because I love Eve Rodsky and I love Fair Play, and I have the cards and I have the book and I use them all the time. And I have a lot of clients who use them as well. But what happens when we just divide out the physical tasks and we don't take on unpacking some of these pressures and expectations is, if I think being a good mom equals being the one that gets up at night with my baby, being the one that is responsible for soothing my baby, being the one that needs to be there if my baby gets hurt or my child gets hurt, if that equals being a good mom in my mind, I might want to share that load because it feels smothering, but I probably won't, or I'll probably end up picking it back up because it equals being a good mom in my mind. It's tethered to my identity as a mom. So it becomes very difficult for me to let others in or hand it over in its entire ownership to my partner. And some of these examples, like soothing, obviously we're going to tag team in and out who soothes. So not entirely can it be handed over, but to share in those things. But when we think that it means equals being a good mom, we're going to really struggle with letting others in to do those things, or when we do let others in, we're going to feel really guilty and kind of hard on ourselves when we have to step away from some of those things.
Yeah, I, you know, personally relate to this too. I'm a full-time working parent in terms of my own business, but also clinically working. My husband works a lot. When you look at the hours of work that we do outside of the home, you know, like the paid work we get outside of the home, I actually work way more than he does. And I am the default parent. Like I do, like you said, the doctor's visits. I'm the one who knows where everything is in the house. I'm the one who knows where that we need more Band-Aids or that we need more toilet paper, all this stuff that adds to like, oh, Mona, where's this thing in the house? And so it definitely adds to it. Do you feel like in your relationship, if you're comfortable sharing, that you have found to be the default parent, or how has it been from a personal perspective?
So that's definitely how it started. And when I talk in the book about my breakdown turned breakthrough, my like realization of postpartum depression slash rage, I was like having a total meltdown after getting pulled over by the police on a morning that was going totally crappy. And I was like hyperventilating in my driveway at home. The kids were in the car and I'm like throwing up in the driveway, just not okay. And in that moment, like upon receiving help and kind of shattering this expectation that I can be perfect in any sense, like I really started to unpack and examine what were the things that were contributing to how I was feeling. And it really kind of like tore a veil for me to start to unpack, you know, I can't carry it all. I can't be and do it all. This is clearly having an impact on me. So I went full force into motherhood. Like I'm going to take on all these things. I'm going to own them and I'm going to do them perfectly. And I'm going to prove to myself and to everybody else that I can do this and I can do this well. But I was going in a million different directions. Yeah. I was trying to live up to the expectations of others. And these weren't really things that I had examined about whether they were anchored in my values or important to me. So I was doing all the things initially. Drop off, pick up, nighttime wakings, feedings, protecting my partner's time because he had to work. So I was the one, you know, dealing with sleep disturbances, all of these things. And then I started on this journey of unpacking these dynamics and what was going on. And now, fast forward to having done the work, the journey, we are, my youngest is 5 and my oldest is about to turn 9. And he's the main contact for school and all the doctor's offices. The school doesn't even know who I am. I walk in and they're like, who's your child? And they wave to him and they know him by name. And he does all the meals and he is the default for or takes ownership over so many of the things that I wouldn't have even contemplated giving him ownership over before. So it definitely started there. And part of this book is the journey and the skills and the tools that we used even in our relationship to really shift that to a more equal partnership. And I would say we're there, if not tilted his way a little bit more than my way because of just the demands on our schedules and things. So it is something that takes time to adjust. And I had to unlearn a lot about what I thought a good mom meant versus what it really truly means to me and tap into my values. But we're in an entirely different place from where we started.
Oh, I love hearing that. And I think that evolution is so healthy. And we experienced the same thing in that with one child, it was default parent was more so me. And then when you add a second child into the mix, it's just not sustainable. And so that male partner or that other partner may have to take on more of that role, like you said. And the other day, my son fell at school and he hurt his tooth. And I was actually taking a nap because I wasn't feeling good from a cold. And I woke up and there was a bunch of phone calls from the school. And then all of a sudden I see a dental appointment was made. Like I got a text message and I was like, wait, what happened? Like, who made the dental appointment? Did the school make the dental appointment? And then I texted my husband. I'm like, did you make a dentist appointment? He's like, yeah, I got the email. I called and made an appointment. I was like, wow, thank you. I was like, because normally that's me, right? Normally it's I get the phone calls. I'm the one who has to make the appointments. And he's like, yeah, I saw the email and I made the appointment. And he goes, hashtag mental load. And I'm like, thank you. that means so much to me. But it's like these little things that I think, you know, I know we'll get into like how to have these conversations with our partners. But that thing, it sounds like such a little thing, but it meant so much to me. And I thanked him. I was like, this is what I'm talking about. You took something off my plate and all that default parenting mental load is overlapped that I didn't have to worry about and it was taken care of. And so it's such a beautiful thing.
Now let's take a break to hear from our sponsors.
As a pediatrician, mom, and podcaster, I want to share with you a podcast I recently discovered. It's called Understood Explains, and this season of the show is hosted by teacher and special education expert Juliana Ertube, and it's all about how to navigate individual education plans, also known as IEPs. The latest season of Understood Explains covers topics like how to tell if your child needs an IEP, and it busts common myths about special education. I listened to an episode called The Difference Between IEPs and 504 Plans, and I learned so much that I honestly didn't know before. I now feel I can better explain these to my patients and their families and better support them in their neurodiversity journey. Navigating ADHD, dyslexia, and other learning and thinking differences can be confusing, and this podcast helps to validate these struggles and provide actionable tips that are useful for parents, teachers, and clinicians. To listen to Understood Explains, search for Understood Explains in your podcast app. That's Understood Explains.
Well, hey there, busy mama. Are you looking for ways to make your life easier, your home less chaotic, and at the same time, add more joy to your life? My name is Deanna Yates, and I'm the host of Wanna Be Clutter-Free, a podcast all about letting go of the stuff we don't need in our lives so that we can focus on what truly matters. Don't worry, I'm not going to tell you to throw it all away or make you feel guilty about keeping something you love, no matter how many other people don't quite understand it. But I will give you practical and, more importantly, actionable advice so that you can make progress right away. And you won't just hear it from me. There are amazing guests, too. It's like having your bestie in your pocket, telling you it's okay to let go of the things that are not serving you and your family in a totally non-judgmental way. So join me over on the podcast where we can work on progress over perfection for those of us that want to be clutter-free.
Feel like you're the martyr in your family? You're not alone. Hey, this is Joanne.
And Brie.
And we're from the No Guilt Mom podcast. Brie, we talk to a lot of moms.
Yeah, we sure do.
And if you're a mom who has a to-do list that is so massive that you get overwhelmed and you shut down.
Or if you fall into the habit of doing everything for everyone and don't know how to change it, we can help you become a no-guilt mom.
We're going to take you from family martyr to family model. That's role model. So that you role model the behavior that you want to see out of your kids.
You're going to go from being tired and overwhelmed to energized and guilt-free.
Every week, you'll get actionable strategies that you can implement right away from the experts that we interview and from us.
We also have a whole lot of fun. So check out the No Guilt Mom podcast everywhere you listen to your favorite shows.
And, you know, you already kind of alluded to a little bit of why, you know, motherhood seems to have changed right now or why moms are struggling. But has it changed from past generations? And why do you think our generation of mothers may be struggling a little bit more? Is it that inability to let go of the control or the desires of what they want, not knowing their expectations or, you know, what they need? Or what do you think it is?
Yeah, well, in 1950, only 25% of mothers worked outside of the home. 25%. Mm-hmm. The vast majority of mothers, it was their full-time job to caregive and to keep house. Like that was their full-time job and responsibility. And even then, it's more than a full-time. It's like two full-time jobs. And like all the stay-at-home moms out there are freaking, you know, unicorns because it's so relentless day in and day out. To now fast forward, 86% of mothers are working outside of the home. And when we haven't adjusted the expectations of moms to carry all the care work, the unpaid care work and the unpaid domestic labor, but also we're going to work full time and have just inherited another full time role, it is entirely unrealistic to expect of one person. But we look around and everyone's just kind of drowning in plain sight and nobody, like everyone seems to be doing it all and keeping up with it all, that we're like, it must just be me who's struggling with this. And then we start to like kind of gaslight ourselves because it's not any one task that in itself is difficult. Like calling and making a dentist appointment is not hard in itself. But when there's a million tiny little things like that, they add up and they create so much weight. It's like death by a thousand tiny paper cuts, you know, like it's just, it weighs on you over time. And so this expectation that we should embody this more traditional form of motherhood that had the full-time focus on the home while also trying to have a two-income earning house, because that's often what's required of us now. It's just unrealistic and we have to reevaluate what we want for us and for our family.
Oh, yes. I love what you mentioned about that added load, right? The one thing is not the issue. It's that added layers of now I have to do this. And, you know, how I describe it, I know this overlaps a lot with mental load, is when you're focusing on something and then all of a sudden you're just getting pulled, right? Like you're, oh, mommy, where's this toy? You're the one who knows, like for our house, I'm the one who knows where everything is. And it sounds small, but when you're doing something and everyone's asking you, including your partner, hey, have you seen my surgical cap? Have you seen, you know, Ryan's asking me where his toy. I'm like, y'all, everyone needs to control their own thing right now. Like I have my own stuff that I'm trying to look for and keep together. So it is those, you know, little things that add on. And so I completely agree with that. And in your book, Releasing the Mother Load, you discuss a lot about the mental load and default parenting, which is what we've been talking about. The assumption that mothers are naturally better at caregiving and decision-making can be that heavy burden like we're talking about in this conversation. So how can moms and their partners work together to share the mental load and challenge these assumptions as well?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In the book, we talk about a concept called intensive mothering. And this is really the construct of motherhood that we are living in right now. Different cultures and different sort of times and eras have different expectations of what motherhood should look like. And for us, it's intensive mothering. Intensive mothering comes with a few core beliefs. One, that moms should be and are best suited biologically to be the primary caregiver of their child. That child raising and rearing should be all-consuming. It should take all of our time, energy, and resources in order for us to be good at it. That we should be wholly and entirely fulfilled by our role and not long for or desire anything outside of motherhood. And this is a lot of the prevalent messaging in today's society about what it means to be a good mom. And so if we believe that we are the best biologically suited to, whether it's soothe or to show up when they've hurt their little tooth or put their tooth through their lip at school or something, and I have to be the one to soothe them because they're not going to get that same care from our partner, then we are literally trapped in carrying all of the pieces because it has to be us. And I unpack it in the book where it's just not biologically rooted that any of these tasks are gendered. Like, yes, feeding, I exclusively breastfed all three of my boys. Feeding sat with me, but all of this stuff around feeding, my husband would go get the baby, bring him into me in the bed, allow him to feed, would take him out, burp him, change him, put him down, soothe him. So it didn't entirely fall on me. He owned all of the other pieces that couldn't be owned, like, you know, because he didn't have milk. So there are ways, once we start to break out of the fact that it has to be me, there are ways that we can creatively problem solve to shift these loads. But if we are running under the assumption that I'm best biologically suited, it should be me, it must be me, then we shut down any problem solving or conversations with our partner because it's like, done, end of story, it's mine to carry, right? So shifting that belief and that perspective just opens up a curious conversation of, okay, what has to be me? What can be you? What can be shared? And in the book, I have what I call load maps, where it breaks out the invisible labor. So invisible labor is anticipating, researching, planning, and then managing the ongoing management of systems and things after they've been put in place. And it's hard for us often to articulate what these things are because they feel abstract and they feel tiny in their individual pieces. But when you put them down on paper, you can see that it's actually a lot of work. So I provide the load maps and fill them in to try to take some of that labor off of you, the reader, so you don't have to use all that brain power to think about it. But I also include blank ones in a digital download. And these are such an helpful and important conversation starters with your partner because you can take this list of all this invisible labor that has now been made visible in this load map and start there in terms of a conversation. Who can take on what? Who can own what? Is it going to be flexible? Is it going to go back and forth? All of those pieces. But first, we have to accept that it's not just us that has to carry it. And then two, make what is invisible visible so that we can tangibly sort it and come up with a plan.
Oh, I love that. I love that idea. And like I said, the book is so great. I think it's just the fact that there's some workbooks aspect of it, but also all the stuff that you add, the personal experience is just so amazing. So I cannot wait for more people to get this into their hands. And, you know, also asking from a personal perspective, you talked about that invisible labor and how you speak to your partner. Did you find that, you know, it sounds like your partner was really good about, you know, from the beginning, maybe helping with the non-feeding aspects of that newborn period. But is this something that you as a family kind of discuss, you know, you and your partner on a regular basis, like this invisible labor or things that are becoming more so for you or even more so for your partner? And how often do you think those check-ins are really good for people to have?
Yeah, it's really maybe a byproduct of that I live in this work. I feel like we talk about this all the time because I will rage rant about things, not to him, just observations of other things. But one of I've always had a willing partner. He's never not wanted to contribute and carry a part of the load. Now, I know that that is not the reality for some of those who are listening. But a lot of the couples that I work with, surprisingly, like their partners are willing, but it's kind of like make me a list or tell me what to do. Like they don't like take the initiative, you know?
Yeah, that's hard. That's might as well do it ourselves.
Then we are reinforced in this management carrying role. So it's like, I'll do the physical tasks, but like all that invisible labor gets missed when we're in that managerial role. So for those willing partners, having these load maps to show them, hey, you got to just own this part. Like our partners are capable. They go and they function at work. They hold jobs that have all this mental labor involved. Like they're capable to do these things, right? But then we also have like daily and weekly syncs. And I talk about tools like this in the book where no one person is assumed default for any task or event or role in our home. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like top of the week. Okay, we've got a book camp. We've got a, you know, report this PA day, whether we're going, this hockey thing is happening, this tournament hotel needs to be booked. And we sync on what needs to be done and kind of divide out ownership over who will take on what. That small shift in not assuming any one person is responsible, it takes time to get there. But once we can do that, then it's like, okay, I'm not just going to default to assuming this person has ownership. We're going to talk about it and divide it out. So that communication is happening on a mini scale daily, on a more planning scale for the week, probably weekly. And then even beyond that, looking at like summer camp coming up, because we won't have childcare and sort of bigger planning items. So communication and an open line of communication with your partner is so crucial in being able to actually shift the load.
Yeah. Oh, this was such a great conversation. And I cannot wait for people to get access to your book. What would be a final message for everyone listening today to kind of wrap up this conversation?
Picture an invisible backpack for a moment. And it is just full of these bricks of tasks that you carry around. You know the weight of them. You know that they are there. But did you put them in there? Did you put your name on them? Did you claim ownership over them? Or did somebody else put them in that backpack for you? Mm-hmm. And if there's one thing you take away from today, just question, hold on a minute. How did I end up holding this task? How did I have ownership over it? Was it assumed? Was it talked about? And let that place of curiosity be the thing that starts you on this journey of unpacking this invisible labor and shifting some of these dynamics in your home.
Oh, very great conversation. And where can people go to purchase the book and also to stay connected with you and your resources?
Yeah. Releasing the Motherload is available wherever books are sold, which is so exciting.
Yeah.
Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Target, Indigo here in Canada, all the indie bookstores and support your local bookstores, and at ericajossa.com, so DJOSSA.com. I have a free guide that pairs with the book that are worksheets that help you to go through it, a value sort, which is touched on in the book, some activities that you can do by yourself and with your partner. So lots of free resources there as well to pair with the book. And if they want to learn more from me or are struggling at all to adjust to motherhood with anxiety or depression or trying to come up with a maternal plan for sleep, any of those things, my platform MomWell on Instagram or momwell.com or the MomWell podcast helps in all of those adjustment to motherhood, mental health pieces as mom.
Wonderful. And I'm going to be adding links to the show notes so that people can stay connected and obviously learn more about your book. And thank you so much for joining me today, Erica. I can't wait to have you on for a future episode.
It was so great. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and for everyone listening today, make sure you leave a review and a rating. We love when you call out the guests that you really love that were on the show. So make sure you say how much you love this episode, share it on your social media. Like I said, it's how the show continues to grow. And I cannot wait to chat with another guest next time.
When it comes to raising kids, there's so much to consider. Things like, what do we feed them? When do we feed them? How do they sleep? What does it look like to raise kind kids? How does their nervous system work? How do I keep myself calm? What are my triggers? There's so much that comes into play. And we are distilling all of that information for you at Voices of Your Village podcast, where we bring experts in the field of early childhood and education and psychology and across the board so that you don't have to comb the internet for information. You get to show up and hang out and have shame-free, judgment-free conversations and insights into what it looks like to raise kind, empathetic, emotionally intelligent humans. I'm Alyssa Blask Campbell. I have a master's degree in early childhood education. I'm a mom of two, and I am walking this journey right alongside you doing this work. Come hang out with me at Voices of Your Village, and we can dive into real conversations with actionable tips.